Every now and then, an interim minister gives an interim-type sermon, and this is one of those. So this is a disclaimer for newcomers, because this is a transitional year for the congregation. This service and this sermon will focus on internal issues, and that is not typical for a sermon, which usually focuses more outward or more on our own lives. This is the lives of those of you who live within this congregation and interact with one another. So tune in next week for a different kind of sermon, but this one is about us. Today, less than a week after President Obama gave his State of the Union address, I want to talk, and after the service, dialogue with you about the state of the church, this church. One of the interim year developmental tasks, this is now citing chapter and verse from the interim literature, is illuminating the congregation's unique identity, its strengths, its needs, and its challenges. So, back in September, some of you may remember, when I introduced the interim tasks to symbolize this particular task, illuminating the congregation's needs, challenges, and its unique identity, I unpacked this mirror from my interim suitcase. The suitcase was filled with other items symbolic of the interim year. But I will let this stand as the symbol for this particular interim task today. I actually had an earlier version of this, broke it once on the way to a different church, and a parishioner found this nice antique mirror to replace it, which was sweet. But it's a very important aspect of what an interim minister does, to reflect back what she sees happening in the congregation. So as an interim minister, I strive in many ways to offer my observations in committee meetings and other contexts, my observations of how the congregation is operating as a way to hold up that mirror. And today, I would like to reflect back not only my own point of view, but some of what you have been saying to me about this church by way of illuminating your unique identity and sense of self. Now, this interim stuff is really serious business. Therefore, I'd like to begin with a joke I heard recently. Seems as though this fellow Joe was walking across a bridge one day, and he saw a man standing on the edge with one foot over, about to jump off. Joe immediately ran over and said, "Stop, stop, don't do it." "Why shouldn't I?" said the man. Joe said, "Well, there's so much to live for." "Like what?" "Well, are you religious or atheist?" The man answers, "Religious." "Me too. Are you Christian or Jewish?" "Christian." "Me too. Are you Catholic or Protestant?" "Protestant." "Me too. Are you Episcopalian or Baptist?" "Baptist," says the man. "Wow, me too. Are you Baptist Church of God or Baptist Church of the Lord?" "Baptist Church of God." "Me too. Are you Original Baptist Church of God or are you Reformed Baptist Church of God?" "Reformed Baptist Church of God." "Wow, me too. Are you Reformed Baptist Church of God, Reformation of 1879, or Reformed Baptist Church of God, Reformation of 1915? "Reformed Baptist Church of God, Reformation of 1915. To which Joe said, "Die, heretic scum," and pushed him off the bridge. It is, It is utterly amazing to me what people will fight about with regard to religion between or even within religious communities. Now, in our Unitarian Universalist communities, because we embrace theological diversity, we may not squabble over fine points of doctrine. But nevertheless, we do find things from time to time to have conflict over. For instance, back in 1976, when I was the minister at the First Unitarian Universalist Church in Duluth, Minnesota, a serious fight broke out at the end of an otherwise congenial congregational meeting over the question, believe it or not, of whether smoking in the sanctuary should be permitted during coffee hour, which took place at the back of the sanctuary every Sunday. That's the only place they had for that gathering. The smokers felt that they had conceded enough already by refraining from smoking during the service. This skirmish became very intense and lasted for quite a while, with people lining up on both sides and not speaking to each other, but speaking only among themselves. For more than two decades, I served in this district on the district conflict management team. That team no longer exists. It morphed into another kind of team, and now it's that job is taken over by the district executives. But that team was often asked to come in when a conflict was already at a very high level in a congregation. We came in as consultants. And as a consultant in that regard, I walked into some legendary congregational fights with factions lining up, rumors flying, and sometimes people already resigning in protest or in dismay. Conflict in congregations is not uncommon, and some conflict can be healthy and positive. The poet William Blake once said, "Without conflict, there is no progression." It is how a conflict is managed within a congregation that can make it either a destructive one that lasts for years and that keeps coming back in different forms, or a constructive one that can be either resolved or managed, not necessarily to everyone's complete satisfaction, but at least to a degree that can be handled by most or all concerned. One of the ways I have found that helps to diffuse conflict is to bring it into the open among those most directly involved, so that the parties can talk face to face rather than resort to talking about it only within the groups that agree with each other. That way, talking only in groups that agree with each other, that way there be dragons, believe me. When factions form, people reinforce each other in further polarizing and often in escalating the conflict, even if that's not their intention. So now I interrupt this sermon for a commercial message. Tune in next week for a sermon on gossip and rumor. This will be an exploration of one of the potentially destructive aspects of conflict, gossip and then rumors flying. It will be mostly about the role of gossip in our lives, but it will touch on the phenomena of gossip and rumor in congregations as well. This congregation has had its share of conflict over the years, and there have been a couple of issues recently that have required open conversation among the parties. But unlike the situations I have sometimes found in the congregations I have worked with, this is not, as far as I can see, a generally conflicted and factionalized congregation. In fact, and here's some good news, what I have seen here so far is a pretty healthy congregation with people who genuinely care for each other, even in most cases when they may disagree. More good news? I keep hearing newcomers and visitors talk about how warm and how welcoming this congregation is. Since the fall, we have welcomed 8 new members, and 2 more will be joining very soon. For a congregation of around only 140 members, 10 new members in less than half a year is a very good number. It would be wonderful to be able to maintain that trend so that there is net growth, even though growth brings with it challenges. Challenges such as parking, space here in the sanctuary, everyone recognizes that one. Space in the sanctuary, space at coffee hour, space for children's religious education. All these are problems that come with growth. When I first drove up here and saw all the parking, even up and down and all around, I thought, oh, maybe parking's not an issue here. I spent 14 years serving a congregation, San Mateo, across the bay, that had no parking. And they were on an urban street corner, so there was a real parking issue. So I thought, oh, parking won't be so much of a problem here. But one day recently, I had the luxury of coming later than I usually do. Usually I'm here an hour early and can park easily. But this particular day, when Bob Meese was talking to all of you about searching for a new minister, I came late, just before the service, and then I saw what the parking situation can be really here, where you really eventually some people end up on the street because there's nowhere else to go. So even though the lot looks big, it fills up fast. Here's a reading that I had put in a newsletter column recently that I would like to offer you that distinguishes living from dying churches. I found this posted on a bulletin board at the San Mateo Church many years ago, not attributed to any author. Living churches always have parking problems. Dying churches have plenty of parking. Living churches are constantly changing their methods. Dying churches don't have to. Living churches have lots of noisy kids. Dying churches are as quiet as a tomb. Living churches' expenses always exceed their income. Dying churches take in more than they ever dream of spending. Living churches are constantly improving and planning for the future. Dying churches worship the past. Living churches grow so fast, you don't know people's names. In dying churches, you've known everyone's name for years. Living churches support community work heavily. Dying churches keep it all at home. Living churches dream great dreams of beloved community. Dying churches relive nightmares. Living churches have the fresh wind of love blowing. Dying churches are stale with bickering. Living churches don't have can't in their vocabulary. Dying churches have nothing but. When I printed this in the newsletter, I asked you to consider, those of you who read that, ask you to consider all these criteria and decide what you think is happening here. But I would say now, using these criteria, that this is very much a living church. Attendance at services is good. We are getting new members, and new families with children are coming and staying. Many of the activities that happen outside of Sunday mornings are thriving as well. This past November, we had a wonderful celebration of the 60th anniversary of the founding of this church. And just this past Monday, we had an impressive turnout of adults and children for the Hayward Community March and Rally honoring Dr. King, as many of you saw. Overall, I would say that this church is on a positive trajectory. And this is at a time in American society when many mainline religious organizations are in decline, and some are declining steeply. This past fall, I facilitated 6 cottage meetings, I called them, and I was quite pleased with the amount and level of participation. A total of 61 people came to the meetings, And there I ask people in these groups to say, to speak one thing they like, to share one thing they like about the congregation, and one thing they would change if they could wave a magic wand and change it. And here is some of what you said. Mentioned most often as a like is the sense of community here, the people, the friendliness, the welcoming atmosphere. People also like the sense of this being a free-thinking, open-minded place where diverse ideas and beliefs can be expressed. Also mentioned was an appreciation for this church's activism and involvement in the larger community. And again, mentioned was the influx of new people, the music, the non-pretentiousness, the grounds, and the indoor spaces. This is just a partial list. Here are some of the things you said you would change if you could. Mention was frequently made about the constituency of the congregation. People would like to see more children and families, and more teens and young adults, where there is a very serious gap, an age gap, not uncommon in congregations these days, and more ethnic diversity. Although I mentioned that conflict here is generally not especially high in comparison to other congregations, a few in the cottage groups mentioned a sense that there is some lack of openness in some areas. One in particular that was mentioned was Christianity. Not as much openness as this person at least would like to Christian ideas and maybe forms. Mentioned also was a lack of a willingness to compromise on some issues and some intolerance for differing points of view. One person spoke of a feeling sometimes of cliquishness. Another expressed a desire to remove layers of homophobia and white privilege within the congregation. And some expressed a wish for even deeper involvement in the larger community. This is also a partial list. One thing several people mentioned, most of these that I've mentioned are one or two people, but one thing that quite a few people mentioned was the problem with the acoustics in the social hall, especially at coffee hour, after the service when the hall is full. I hear it myself. It's deafening. I mean, the background noise. But if you think about it, this complaint is a very positive thing because people here really want to be in community with one another and want to hear each other. And the noise level in the social hall is such that it's difficult for many. I would concur with that. And I remember, again, in San Mateo, when we had that same problem in a much bigger hall, we put some sound tiles, and it cost several thousand dollars, but we did it because, again, it was important to foster community, to be able to actually talk with and hear one another. The board, by the way, is working on this. There is diversity with regard to what people want in Sunday services. The time of the service, the types of music in it, the types of subjects in sermons, preferences about different service elements. Several people spoke of various changes they would like to see in the buildings, the grounds, and the furnishings. You can actually read about your many and varied responses right here in this document. These are green sheets and are on the back table. Whoop, sorry, that's one problem we have. If anyone has a cushion for a microphone, we could use one. But this is the write-up of those cottage meetings, and it's available for any of you to pick up. I didn't even go into what you would like for the future. I took people on a guided waking dream 10 years into the future, stipulating that they wouldn't age a day in taking this little journey. Because I've always had people say, 10 years, I might not be here. So it makes for interesting reading, and especially, I think, interesting is my admittedly crude and unscientific sampling of members' feelings about different areas, and I tried to put it into a little chart where I had, for those of you who remember and were there, I had people line up along a continuum with two sort of polarities on one end and the other. One of them was over here, the humanists, over here, the theists. And people were a little surprised at that, at where people placed themselves on that continuum. They weren't all in the humanist camp, despite what some think. So take a look at the statistics. I also ask things like the kind of service people liked in music, why they come here, is it mostly for spiritual nurturance or social activism, and so on. And you can see the numbers. It's crude, it's unscientific, but it's a snapshot. One of the issues that has come up in different ways at the cottage meetings and in other venues is a concern that I also see here as a significant challenge, perhaps the most significant challenge at the present time, and that is leadership and the number of leaders willing to step forward. There is very strong lay leadership here in this congregation, but many leaders wear three or four or even more different leadership hats. This phenomenon, too few leaders taking on too many leadership positions, is a sure recipe for burnout. There are some ways to address and solve this. Rotating leadership positions, perhaps even in some cases instituting term limits like the board has, maybe not so much for committees or committee members, although sometimes that can be effective, but particularly for committee chairs who once a leadership position lands in a committee chair's lap, that person often worries, will this be forever? Can I ever get out from under this? And sometimes it's really healthy for the person to be able to take a sabbatical from that leadership role. Also, holding regular leadership training workshops to train newcomers, new members, to take on leadership positions is a way to address that. And expanding the job of the nominating committee to a year-round committee that recruits new leaders for open positions would be another way to address this. I understand you used to have a volunteer coordinator who would do some of that, but you don't now, but it still can be done. Another theme I've felt here as the moment I came and still going is adjustment to change and adjustment to a new minister being among you. And perhaps a bit of testing the water of how this minister will use her role and authority here. This is not surprising in a time of ministerial transition. Katie did it this way. What is Joy going to do in this regard, whatever the subject? Your last minister, of course, had a particular style of operating and particular preferences. I bring a different style and way of doing things to a certain extent, and I can guarantee you that your next settled minister will bring yet another style that will, again, take some getting used to, some adjustment as you begin working together. This kind of shifting is even harder for a congregation to do when a prior minister's tenure was a long one, as is the case here. Actually, who have had two long-tenured ministers, Mark Bellatini for 18 years and Katie Kanderin for 15 years. That is a very good thing when you think about it, that ministers come here and want to stay. And hopefully that will continue because it's an awful lot of work to find a new minister, as you will still be learning more about. You already learned some about that process from Bob Meese. This is actually this shifting and people getting used to changes in different styles is one of the most important reasons to engage with an interim minister for a year or two. This gives you as a congregation practice in adjusting to this change in leadership. I recently came upon a statement about what it feels like to be a Unitarian Universalist minister, and this statement cracked me up because I so recognized its truth. It said, "Being a Unitarian Universalist minister is like pushing a wheelbarrow full of frogs." It's really another version of the herding cats expression. Actually, this description can apply and does apply to lay leaders as well. There you are, as a Unitarian Universalist minister or a lay leader, pushing that wheelbarrow in a particular direction. But the frogs in there have their own ideas, and they are jumping about every which way, some of them even jumping out. Sometimes, though, you do and you will see your way together, minister, leaders, and congregation. And there will be net forward momentum. It takes patience, persistence, and a good deal of faith and mutual trust. Currently, there has been some discussion at the board level about this moving forward together as a congregation. And a suggestion arose that perhaps during this transitional time, there is an opportunity here to revisit and refine the church's mission statement, really to engage in a process about what the mission of this congregation is, and create even a slogan that is like a succinct mission statement. Sometimes a slogan just by itself can have rallying power. And there's have been some good suggestions that have come up. A slogan or a mission statement is a proclamation about what the congregation is about and hints at what the common vision is or can be. One thing I can do as your interim minister and want to work out dates with the board around this is to offer a visioning workshop sometime this spring. I'm not sure about late or early spring. I have to navigate the other dates that happen in the congregation, and there are quite a few coming up, like the congregational meeting to vote on members of the Ministerial Search Committee to get that process launched, and other regular meetings that come up. But I'd like to offer this workshop as a way to generate and then work on some specific goals in several areas of congregational life. So overall, my assessment at this midpoint in the first interim year is that this congregation is healthy, very much alive, with some good energy and some modest growth. You face persistent challenges in recruiting leadership, and right now there is some anxiety as you are getting used to change. This may be a good time to work more together on a shared mission, a common vision, and some reachable goals. The psychologist Eric Fromm once said, "Love is the active concern for the life and the growth of that which we love." To which I would add, if you love and appreciate this congregation, and perhaps if you have not been as active here as your time and energy permit, this is a good time to turn your love into active concern. To join, and if you haven't joined and would like to, please talk to me. To become involved and to support this church generously with what we call the three T's, your time, your talents, and your treasure. So I would like to invite you to take some coffee, come back here in the sanctuary. For once, there's not a meeting going on after service, not that I know of anyway. And let's have some conversation, some further conversation about this congregation and what is happening now and what might be in your future. So I close with these words of the great and immortal writer Anonymous. If you are proud of this congregation, become its advocate. If you are concerned for its future, share its message. If its values resonate deep within you, give it a measure of your devotion. This congregation cannot survive without your faith, your confidence, your enthusiasm. Its destiny, the larger hope, rests in your hands.